My name is Jackie Lamports. Today is Thursday, August 12th. Welcome to the Capital Daily Podcast. Today on the show.
You're right to swing your arm stops where the other person's face begins. So you're right to not to get vaccinated. Yeah, you have that right, but then you have to take the appropriate steps not to expose others.
The fourth wave is here, but are things different this time? We have a conversation about ethics as hospitalizations and deaths overwhelmingly seem to affect the unvaccinated population. Today's Capital Daily Podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Residences, now under construction in the heart of Victoria's coveted Old Town. Find out more at thepearlresidences.ca. We are now, unfortunately, in a fourth wave of the pandemic. Case numbers are shooting up at an alarming rate as the Delta variant takes the lead in spread. But there's something different about this wave, and it leaves a lot of room for discussion on ethics. In the first few weeks of the pandemic, we often heard the phrase, "we're all in this together," or that this was the great equalizer, notably from Madonna.
It's the great equalizer. And what's terrible about it is what's great about it. What's terrible about it is it's made us all equal in many ways.
To her credit, in the least flattering way that I can say that, she began a large public conversation. Were we really all in this together? The answer was obvious as the world watched her soak in her luxury bathtub with a glass of what I'm going to assume was a very expensive drink. The pandemic was not a great equalizer. It affects affluent groups of society much differently. It was as simple as Madonna can live off her fortune in her large house and wait this whole thing out in safety, while working class people were putting themselves and their families at risk every day by having no choice but to use public transit or to go to their jobs, which were suddenly deemed essential. Cases were and are disproportionately affecting people along racial lines, income level, and location, among other things. But there was one thing at the beginning of the pandemic that differs from now, and that is chosen risk. That isn't to say that at the beginning, wearing masks and abiding by social restrictions didn't lower people's risk. In fact, it did. But now, vaccinations provide the most ideal protection, and they're available to nearly everyone in the province. In British Columbia, according to the data available as of writing this, nearly 74% of folks have received their first dose. That's nearly 83% of all people eligible. Just over 63% are fully vaccinated, and that's almost 72% of all people eligible. But it seems the demand for first doses is plateauing. You may recall a previous episode of the podcast where we spoke to an expert who set the herd immunity percentage at 85% of the total population. It's close, but not there. And that target may be set even higher as the Delta variant's transmissibility is significantly higher than anything else we've seen. Let's step back. This summer has been great. I saw a tweet recently of someone jokingly reminiscing about June. June was a great month. We saw restrictions lift, cases plummeted, people relaxed, and it seemed like the first glimpse of real hope for life after the pandemic was here. That's something that is difficult to reel back from. Even as cases climb, convincing people that we have to revert is no easy task. But the question becomes how much we actually need to revert. In the past waves, we saw blanket lockdowns across the province, and vaccinations were still far off or just beginning. Now we have a year's worth of data and research. One team is looking to use that data, and specifically data from the United States, to predict when and where we'll see outbreaks in the province. Zhu Kuizhang is on that team. He's an assistant professor at the University of Victoria and a Canada Research Chair in Biostatistics and Bioinformatics. He told me the data he is working with may help with localizing restrictions going forward.
So currently, based on our result, we believe some factors are important for the growth curve of the infection count. That means we can use different policy in different area because it's not free. Controlling the disease is not free. We have to pay some price. If we lock down, we know lockdown is really important, but if we lock down, there are some financial or economic loss. So that means maybe we want to put the high-risk area more severe lockdown. low-risk area, less severe lockdown. That is some conclusion we can make from our current published paper. In the next step, we will have a better model, try to predict the count, how does the count change. According to our prediction, we can address the issue, like in certain county, the future prediction is really high. You should take some action. Otherwise, it will be a big trouble.
Keeping restrictions local to outbreak zones is a shift we're already seeing. Currently, the Okanagan is under restrictions that don't apply to other parts of the province. And now we get to the point of this, the question about ethics and restrictions. Currently, the majority of hospitalizations are among folks who are unvaccinated or have just received one dose. And the most recent data available from the province, which measured June 24th to July 24th, hospitalizations among completely unvaccinated people were almost 11 times higher than fully vaccinated. They were even about 6 times higher than people who had just one dose. In the United States, whose fourth wave is further ahead than ours, data broken down by 40 states shared by the New York Times show people who were fully vaccinated accounted for between just 0.1% of and as many as 5% of those hospitalized. This also obviously means a significantly lower risk of death for vaccinated individuals. We can also look at the trend in the United Kingdom as some sort of insight for our fourth wave. While their current wave, which seems to be having another spike, hit a peak that rivaled their most intense wave, the hospitalizations and deaths did not hit that peak. In fact, it has been the least severe wave in terms of hospitalizations and deaths. They currently have about 59% of their population fully vaccinated. The United States, however, has been seeing an increase in hospitalizations. They have about 49% of their population fully vaccinated. In our case, it's too early to tell if the hospitalizations and deaths will increase to a concerning point. Experts say the hospitalizations will lag behind case numbers, therefore we must wait and see what our own situation will be. But we've entered a new point of the pandemic conversation. What happens if the unvaccinated by choice population is the driving force in cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, as seems to be the case now? Do we still need to have blanket restrictions? Should the vaccinated population have to endure the mental health, economic, and social impacts of yet another round of restrictions? With that, I turn this conversation into an ethical one. I spoke to Ike Henner-Kluge.
I'm a professor teaching applied ethics at the University of Victoria. I act as a consultant to healthcare professionals, lawyers, ministries, and everybody in between.
Before we get to that conversation, though, I also had Zhukui Chang weigh in. This was his thought.
I don't have my own research to support, but I believe after people get vaccine, they still have a good chance to get the COVID. Mm-hmm. The only thing is they may not have a very severe response. That can even make it riskier. The reason is if a virus can kill somebody very fast, that virus won't last long because once they kill everybody, then the virus die. The most dangerous virus is it can stay unaffected. So those are the people who get vaccine. They can carry the virus. They can spread it to others. Although they are protected, but they can still transfer this to other people who didn't get the vaccine. So I think it's very critical. We should lock down everybody, even they get vaccine. They are protected, but they have the responsibility to help the community to stop the pandemic.
That still goes back largely to what our goals are in the pandemic. Are we trying to erase COVID, or are we trying to keep hospitalizations and deaths as low as possible? So far, it has been the latter, but if vaccinated people are still spreading the virus to vulnerable people in a drastic way, a whole other conversation is needed. Maybe that's another discussion, but for now, we stick to the one about ethics. Ike, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
In a pandemic, we have this strange balance between public safety and personal freedoms. Obviously, a best-case scenario is that everyone chooses to do what is best for everyone else, but that doesn't always happen. So what do you think the ethical balance is between safety and freedom?
Ethically speaking, the governing principle here is what is generally called the principle of autonomy. And that is generally understood as the principle that everyone has the right to self-determination. In other words, the right to autonomy. However, what is not usually understood is that, like all principles, like all rights, it comes with conditions. And the principle of autonomy comes with the condition, quote, subject to the equal and competing rights of others, unquote. Because, of course, it is also the next ethical principle is the principle of equality. Therefore, if all persons are equal as persons, then they all have autonomy, which means that the exercise of autonomy has to be adjusted to the competing interests and equal interests of other persons. Hence, the full principle is the right to self-determination subject to the equal and competing rights of others. And this immediately gives a solution to the problem of public safety and autonomy. As soon as the exercise of autonomy, and it doesn't matter in what area, impacts on other individuals, then the rights of other individuals have to be taken into account, and they count as equal. Therefore, if the exercise of autonomy threatens the welfare of other individuals, then the exercise of autonomy is ruled out in that connection. Mm-hmm. And this was captured very nicely by over 100 years ago by a professor at the Harvard University called Zechariah Chafee, who said, "Your right to swing your arm stops where the other person's face begins." And this applies, he was raising this in the context of free speech. And he was raising in the context, how far does the right to free speech go? And he was pointing out that even that right has limits. Mm-hmm. Now, when this is applied to the present context of COVID-19, that means if the exercise of autonomy threatens the welfare of other individuals, for example, by insisting on interacting with them, but not taking appropriate steps to safeguard their health, then that right ceases, and society has the right to impose limits.
And we'll pause here for a quick word from our sponsor. Today's Capital Daily podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Residences, now under construction in the heart of Victoria's coveted Old Town. The Pearl Residences highlight the best the city has to offer. A brand new release of junior one-bedroom homes starting at $370,000, in addition to one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and two-bedroom and den options are still available. Discover more at thepearlresidences.ca. Let's talk about two specific big ones that are current right now, and that is masks and vaccines. It seems that the government did have a mandatory mask mandate, but they're not doing the same for vaccines. What are the differences between those two things?
Well, masks are different from vaccinations, right? A mask is far less effective in preventing transmission than is vaccination, even though data show that it is possible to carry the virus when one is vaccinated, even twice. The likelihood of infecting someone is very, very much lower because the transmissibility is reduced. This is not the case necessarily or even to the same degree with masks. Therefore, if people want to interact with other people in a social context, then they have an obligation to take the appropriate steps, and which simply put means they have an obligation to get vaccinated.
Okay. So in your opinion, do you think that the government has the right to mandate it?
Oh, there's no question about that. And of course, there's the fear that is sometimes raised that this is the thin edge of the wedge because it will set a precedent. But in this connection, that is merely an unfounded assumption because government has put in place following the same principle, rules, and regulations that govern interactions with other people without the setting a precedent. Let me give you an example. If I'm blind, I'm not allowed to drive. This has not set a precedent in terms of discrimination, and I might as well focus on that term a moment that I mentioned a moment ago, namely discrimination. Not all discrimination is unethical. Discrimination is unethical if and only if the discrimination is not based in fact, but is based on values. And if the values are discriminatory, then it is unethical. So, for example, values like sexist values, racial values, even religious values may be unethical. So, for example, I'll give you a religious value. If a particular religion maintains that those who belong to that religion are chosen by God above all others, and that they're therefore ethically different, that's discriminatory.
Okay. Let's talk about the difference between government and private institutions, because while the government doesn't seem to be mandating a vaccine quite yet, institutions might have different opinions. There are private workplaces that are debating creating mandatory vaccinations for employees. In that case, you would find that ethical?
Yes, because we're dealing with different situations. First of all, several universities already, University of Ottawa and University of Western Ontario, have mandated vaccinations, unless there are reasonable grounds why individuals cannot be vaccinated. Here one makes exceptions. In other words, if there are reasonable grounds that somebody getting vaccinated would have a negative reaction to that and be health impaired, then that individual has to, then the university has to make due allowances for that individual. It does this all the time. For instance, the university makes due allowances for blind persons or hearing impaired persons. That doesn't mean that anyone can claim that due allowance, because there must be a reason for that. Because making a due allowance says the individual is different. And if the individual is really different, then the facts must support that. And simply having a different opinion doesn't support that.
Okay, and there's something else that I wanted to get to, and this is kind of something that's been on my mind for a couple of days as I think about this episode that I'm making. And that's that there are there is a portion of the population that is choosing not to get vaccinated despite being eligible. And that might be a matter of personal freedom, but the rest of the population is then impacted by that. So does the rest of the population still have the ethical right to protect them? We see a lot about how we measure what we can and cannot do as a population when it comes to COVID-19 outbreaks. The numbers we're looking at aren't case counts, they're hospitalizations. So the goal of the health measures were never to hit COVID zero, they were to keep our hospitals from becoming overwhelmed. And at this point, the majority of hospitalizations are folks who are not fully vaccinated or refused to get any dose. So in a situation where we do have fully vaccinated people, the amount that are willing to be fully vaccinated, is there any ethical responsibility to continue public health measures if the spread of the virus continues in the unvaccinated population?
Yes, because remember what I said before, quoting Chaffee, your right to swing your arm stops where my face begins. Therefore, if somebody chooses not to be vaccinated, then they have the duty not to interact with individuals in a way where spreading the virus is increased.
Okay.
Therefore, they have the duty not to engage in social interactions with other individuals. That's the matter of choice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
After all, they don't have to interact with people. But if they do, then in fact, again, subject to the equal and competing rights of others.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, and then the other side, the people who are vaccinated, the majority of the population, Do they have any obligation? Does the province have any obligation to set restrictions that would then protect the people who aren't vaccinated, which is where the spread would be in that case?
Well, ethically or politically? Because the reason I'm asking that is, ethics is one thing, politics is another.
Okay.
And whether a provincial government decides to take certain steps is a matter of politics. It is not necessarily a matter of ethics. And notice that I said provincial government, because after all, the feds have no say in healthcare. That's part of our constitution. Mm-hmm. It's the provinces. So back then, could the province require certain measures? Yes, absolutely. Whether they do is a matter of politics.
Okay, interesting. Okay. And then there's the other question of the people who cannot get vaccinated, as you referred to when you were using the schools as an example. They aren't being unvaccinated by choice. It's because of health issues. So if the spread continues and then it puts those folks at risk because there is a portion of the population that still refuses to get vaccinated on personal freedom grounds, will those people then become responsible for any illness or death in the immunocompromised or health compromised people?
Short answer, yes.
Okay.
Well, this is what I said in the beginning, right? Your right to swing your arm stops where the other person's face begins. So your right to not to get vaccinated, yeah, you have that right, but it stops. In other words, but then you have to take the appropriate steps not to expose others,
mm-hmm.
which means that you then have to refrain from social contact.
Mm-hmm. Ike, thank you so much. This has been quite black and white, actually, and I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
For all of your island data on COVID-19, I recommend following our reporter, Brishti Basu, on Twitter. She posts updates every single day that there is information that comes out, and also she continuously updates our vaccination tracker for the island at capitaldaily.ca. And also at Capital Daily, you can find Brishti's many updates about the COVID situation in the province and specifically on the island. All that, again, at capitaldaily.ca. And if you want to help support our local journalism and connect your business with our engaged and curious Greater Victoria audience of over 50,000, email our partnerships team at advertising@capitaldaily.ca. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a rating and a review and also subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes going forward. We post new shows every Monday to Friday. My name is Jackie Lamports. This is the Capital Daily Podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow.